This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Some hospitals around the United States continue to hit capacity as COVID-19 cases continue to surge. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Thursday reported an increase of more than 81,000 new cases, while the number of deaths had risen by more than 1,000. Task Force member and director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, said coronavirus cases were rising in 47 states and patients were overwhelming hospitals across the country. The White House Coronavirus Task Force Thursday warned of a persistent and broad spread of COVID-19 in the western half of the United States, and its members urged aggressive mitigation measures to curb the infections. The hardest hit areas include a number of battleground states that will play an important role in Tuesday's U.S. presidential election as Republican President Donald Trump seeks a second term against Democratic challenger Joe Biden. As AP's Jackie Quinn reports, the situation has gotten so bad in places like El Paso, Texas, that officials have ordered a two-week shutdown of non-essential activities.
At the Columbia University National Center for Disaster Preparedness, Dr. Erwin Redlener says he's frustrated by the inconsistent response from the government. He says if leaders had been disciplined about employing various health control measures early on, including masks and social distancing, more than 100,000 lives could have been spared of the nation's 227,000 victims. Redlener and other critics cite a president who scorned masks, downplayed the threat, and undercut scientists, but also governors who resisted containment measures and state lawmakers who limited funding for health care. I'm Jackie Quinn.
More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. In France, some doctors expressed relief, but business owners despaired as it prepared to shut down again for a month to try to put the brakes on the fast-moving coronavirus. Shoppers at a Paris farmers market said that they were ready to restrict their freedoms given the rising number of virus-related deaths and COVID patients filling French hospitals. The new measures are set to come into effect midnight. Schools are allowed to remain open in this new lockdown, which is gentler than what France saw in the spring, but still a shock to restaurants and other businesses ordered to close their doors in one of the world's biggest economies. The European Union will finance a transfer of patients across borders within the bloc to prevent hospitals from getting overwhelmed as COVID-19 infections and hospitalizations spike. After a video conference of EU leaders to discuss the health crisis Thursday, the head of the EU Commission said the EU executive had made available 220 million euros to move COVID-19 patients across borders. At the meeting, leaders agreed to better coordinate efforts to battle the virus as infections in Europe exceeded 10 million. Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro says that he will not buy a possible Chinese coronavirus vaccine that's being trialed in Sao Paulo, adding that this was crazy for countries to start locking down again to control second waves of the virus. Last week, Brazil's right-wing president, Jair Bolsonaro, disavowed a decision by his health minister to put and buy 46 million doses of a vaccine from China's biotech called CoronaVac, saying, "We will not buy the Chinese vaccine." Bolsonaro also hit at any new lockdown measures as crazy. The president, U.S. president's executive order on diversity training is now facing a lawsuit. We get more from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Three civil rights groups have filed a federal lawsuit challenging President Donald Trump's executive order that prohibits federal agencies, contractors, and grant recipients from offering certain diversity training. The complaint was filed in federal court in Washington, D.C. by the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, the National Urban League, and the National Fair Housing Alliance. The lawsuit argues Trump's order violates free speech rights and hinders efforts to address systemic race and sex discrimination. Trump signed the executive order last month. In a statement, the Labor Department says it is confident it will prevail in the lawsuit. Mike Gracia, Washington.
And again, just recapping top stories, some hospitals around the United States do continue to hit capacity as COVID-19 cases continue to surge. The CDC said on Thursday that an increase of more than 81,000 new cases is dramatically impacting the number of hospitals in the United States. More at VOAnews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Early results indicate the ruling CCM party may be headed for a clean sweep in Wednesday's Tanzania election.
As we are speaking right now, the Electoral Commission in Zanzibar has already declared Dr. Hussein Mwinyi from Chama cha Mapinduzi the winner of the election in Zanzibar.
Ivorians are voting tomorrow, but the opposition is boycotting. Senegal's president, Macky Sall, dissolves his government. Demonstrators close bridges in Sudan's capital to protest fuel price hike. And Nigerians react to U.S. rejection of their WTO candidate.
Unlike in the case of World Bank or IMF, where America has overbearing influence, in the case of WTO, it simply has one vote. President Trump has spoken, but the world has moved in the opposite direction.
Angola's president accuses the opposition of fomenting anti-government protests. And this morning, a view from Liberia on the 2020 U.S. election. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Continues in Wednesday's Tanzania general election. Early results indicate the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi CCM party may be headed for a clean sweep. Already, the National Electoral Commission has declared CCM presidential candidate Hussein Mwinyi winner of the Zanzibar presidential contest. There are unconfirmed reports that the opposition ACT Wazalendo presidential candidate for Zanzibar, Malem Seif Sharif Hamad, had been arrested. Some high-profile parliamentary candidates for the main opposition Chadema party, including national chairperson Freeman Mbowe, have reportedly lost their seats. Chadema presidential candidate Tundu Lissu has rejected the results, citing unprecedented level of fraud. Neville Mina is the secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum.
As we are speaking right now, the Electoral Commission in Zanzibar has already declared Dr. Hussein Mwinyi from Chama cha Mapinduzi the winner of the election in Zanzibar. Also, in the mainland, United Republic, where Magufuli was vying for the second term, there's a clear sign that he's going also to win. The CCM has got so many parliamentary seats, including the stronghold of opposition, especially in the northern zone of the country.
What is the opposition saying about the result?
The presidential candidate for Chadema, Tundu Lissu, held a press conference today, and he had registered his concern that the elections was not free and fair, saying that the agencies of the opposition were barred from entering on the polling stations, and some opposition members were arrested, violence from the police and from the army. So many irregularities, and that he can't accept the results. He has said that it's upon the citizens themselves to take action against what he has called a very unfair election process.
In Zanzibar, you are saying that the CCM presidential candidate Mwinyi has won the election there.
The candidate from CCM has already declared by the Electoral Commission that he's the one who has won the election. So this means that the opposition has lost in Zanzibar, and as it is going, it seems that Magufuli is going to win also, because there's a bit of a big margin between him and his close ally, Tundu Lissu.
What can you tell us about the ACT Wazalendo presidential candidate, Mr. Hamad, that he has been arrested?
Sharif Hamad?
Yes.
As you know, in Tanzania, the internet was shut down every day. Sometimes it's very hard to access the information, even from that residence, very close. But since we have no internet, the WhatsApp and the other social media are not working, it's not easy to know exactly what it is. But as long as I was making a follow-up on my reader, because I am connected to VPN, there's no such a thing that Ahmad is arrested.
Neville, thank you very much again. It's always very nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
Neville Mina is secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. The people of Ivory Coast are voting in presidential election tomorrow, Saturday. Incumbent President Alassane Ouattara is seeking a controversial third term, but the opposition says violates the constitution. Ouattara says his second term was really his first because of changes to the 2016 constitution. The opposition has called for a civil disobedience and boycott of the vote. Former President Laurent Gbagbo, who has been barred from taking part in the election, broke his silence yesterday Thursday, warning that Ivory Coast was headed towards a catastrophe if President Ouattara and the opposition did not resolve their differences. Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of Mr. Gbagbo's party.
Our position is that for us, there will be no election in terms of respecting the rules of the constitution. And we are asking the government to postpone that election so that we can have time to settle everything before we have a democratic election. So for us, as the opposition, nothing has changed. If the government maintains the date of that election, it means that the result will not be recognized by the opposition, and the government which will come out of this election will also not be recognized as a legal government.
The former president, Laurent Gbagbo, has spoken out for the first time just before the election. He's on the side of the opposition, so he supports the opposition. At the same time, he's calling for negotiation or talks. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it clearly means that on the one hand, President Gbagbo is in the same position as the opposition in Cote d'Ivoire here, which means that he is opposed to the third term of Mr. Ouattara. It is non-constitutional and it is illegal. So he is appealing to Mr. Ouattara to respect the constitution. Now, the second thing is that he is also appealing to the government, especially to Mr. Ouattara, to open dialogue with the opposition and the civil society so that we can have discussions which can lead to certain agreement in terms of the rules of the election, in terms of the electoral commission concerning the electoral list and so on and so forth.
Right now, there is an African Union and ECOWAS delegation in Cote d'Ivoire. What are you telling them or what are they telling you?
Well, they are not telling anything special to us. They seem to be in the position to accompany the government to violate the constitution. This is what appears to us. Now, what we are telling them is that if they really want to help Cote d'Ivoire, our country, to find a good solution to the crisis, they should not send delegations for the coming election. Besides, we have already told them that if they continue to support Mr. Ouattara in this situation where he is going to organize election which will be boycotted by the opposition, they are also helping him to create a crisis. So they will be responsible for what will happen later on.
Jean-Gervais Tchéide is the vice president for finance of former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. Senegal's president, Macky Sall, dissolved his government late Wednesday without any explanation. Annika Hamishlaw reports from Dakar.
Senegalese President Macky Sall signed four decrees dismissing officials from their posts, including all ministers and state secretaries. The decision, announced late Wednesday, gave no explanation for the sudden dissolution of the government. The announcement came as a surprise to many, including Fatou Ndiaye Dem, the director of family within the Ministry of Women, Family, Gender, and Child Protection. She says she just learned the news like everybody else. All she can say is that they are confident in President Macky Sall's leadership and that whatever he does will be in the best interest of Senegal. Dem adds that she hopes he puts more women in government positions. The dissolution comes 18 months after Macky Sall was reelected to a second term. A statement from Sall's office called on outgoing members to continue their duties while awaiting the formation of a new government. There was no indication as to when Senegal would have a new government. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 30th. Nigerians have expressed confidence that their country's former finance minister, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, will still become the first African and first woman to lead the World Trade Organization, despite the United States rejecting her bid. The 66-year-old secured strong backing to become the WTO's director general, but the U.S. on Wednesday this week threw its support behind South Korean Trade Minister Yoo Myung-hee. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The race to succeed Brazil's Roberto Azevedo as chief of the WTO took an unexpected turn on Wednesday when the United States rejected Nigeria's candidate Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. Okonjo-Iweala, 66, has gathered support from many WTO member countries, but the U.S. is backing her only opponent, South Korea's trade minister Yoo Myung-hee, citing her skills and experience in international trade dealings. But Nigerians continue to stand behind Okonjo-Iweala, who once served as the country's finance minister. Macroeconomic analyst Professor Ken Ife says the U.S. rejection will have no impact on the final decision.
Fortunately, unlike in the case of World Bank or IMF, where America has overbearing influence, in the case of WTO, it simply has one vote. President Trump has spoken, but the world have moved in the opposite direction.
But the rejection could extend the selection process for some additional weeks or even longer. If selected as WTO Director General, Okonjo-Iweala will be the first African and woman to head the global trade watchdog. It's a feat many Africans believe will ensure that the interests of African nations are better represented within the WTO. Eze Onyekpere is an economic analyst and the head of the Center for Social Justice, CSJ. He says with an African leading the WTO, Nigeria and the continent will be more aware of trade negotiations, requirements and opportunities.
The fact that one of our own is there will remind us of what we need to do in a more constant manner and to be able to get proper information at the appropriate time so as to take the opportunities available and take advantage of those opportunities.
Some critics say Okonjo-Iweala lacks the necessary experience in negotiating trade deals. Onyebere disagrees with that opinion.
I know that women by their very nature are usually conciliatory. They know how to settle disputes and resolve them. So I believe that we are going to have a much more harmonious trade relationships across the world.
Ken Ife says whoever emerges as the winner will have huge tasks ahead, including resolving distortions caused by trade clashes between the United States and China.
These two are the biggest economies in the world. And what is going on with them imposing 20%, 25% tariff and all of that, is they're causing so much distortion. One of the things that the serious complaint about against WTO by the president, American president, is that their dispute resolution process is slow. They've been complaining for years on some of those trade violations, and China doesn't want to know.
The opening for a new WTO chief was created in August after WTO chief Azevedo stepped down a year earlier than expected. The Geneva-based organization will meet November 9 for discussions on selecting a new leader. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
People in several Sudanese cities have been protesting this week after the Ministry of Energy on Tuesday doubled the price of fuel to help reduce a budget deficit. The price of fuel in Sudan has jumped four times in 2 years and helped spark mass protests that in 2019 led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. Naba Muhyiddin reports from El Obeid, Sudan.
Sudan's transitional government raised the price of fuel on Tuesday to help trim a budget deficit and bring an end to fuel shortages. Smugglers were taking advantage of low prices to purchase fuel in Sudan and sell it at a higher price in neighboring countries. Minister of Energy Hairi Abdurrahman said we hope this decision will result in the hoped-for results by creating fuel abundance and stop the smuggling. The price of fuel in Sudan has now jumped four times in 2 years. One price hike triggered the mass protests that in 2019 led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. With the latest increase, diesel will be sold at 46 Sudanese pounds, or about 83 US cents per liter, and regular gas will be sold at 56 pounds per liter. But thousands rallied in Khartoum on Thursday to protest the new prices and call for the government to retract the increase. Ala Gassim is one of the protesters who blocked two main bridges Wednesday night in Khartoum. Gassim says increasing the fuel prices adds trouble to people's lives. He says he wishes this step was preceded by consideration of individuals' monthly income. People should take a strong stand against this pricing and totally reject it, he adds. Protester Abdul Karim Hassan, who stopped his car in on the Fitiha Bridge Wednesday, seems determined to make the government back down. Hassan says he was one of the anti-Bashir protesters. He hoped for change. He says he will participate in protests and all resisting campaigns until the transitional government back off on its decision or increases salaries or leaves. Economic analysts like Professor Muhammad Al-Nair think this decision is unfortunate and avoidable in the current time. Muhammad says the decision is indeed unfortunate and the economic situation in Sudan isn't ready for such a decision. He says it's possible to take such a step if economic stabilization was accomplished, with stabilizing the exchange rates and decreasing inflation rates. The U.S. has agreed to remove Sudan from its list of state sponsors of terrorism, a move that should give Sudan access to international loans and create new ties with countries and investors. The government is hoping that move will push the economy, which has struggled for years under the weight of political isolation and U.S. sanctions. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Angolan President João Lourenço on Thursday accused the opposition UNITA of fomenting anti-government protests that have been taking place around the country. The protesters, comprising opposition and civil society groups, are demanding an end to corruption and unemployment. They are also angry about the postponement of local elections that were supposed to take place this year. The government says it has arrested over 100 people, but the organizers said on Wednesday this week that about 400 of their members were still missing. Veteran Angolan independent journalist Mario Pavai says President Lourenço threatened to impose a state of emergency if the protests continue amid the COVID-19 pandemic.
President Lourenço, on the opening session of the Central Committee Rallying Party this Thursday, accuses UNITA to promoting demonstrations and instigating street riots all over Angola, accusing the opposition party to take responsibility for the spread of COVID-19 pandemic. It's important that the president threatened to return to the state of emergency if this kind of demonstrations continue alongside the COVID-19 pandemic.
The activists are saying that some of the protesters are still missing. Did the president address that?
Not at all. The president doesn't refer to the demonstrators, which are still in jail under trial, around 100. The only thing that the president refers is regret on journalists which have been arrested. It's the only point. He doesn't say anything about the people, around 100, who are still in jail under trial. But we must take note that the next Friday, it ends the five-day limit period for the summary judgment, according to law. So we will see what happens.
The main opposition, UNITA, did they respond to the president's speech?
Yes. Mr. Adalberto Costa Jr., current president of UNITA, are saying that the speech of the president accusing his opposition party of the responsibility on the demonstrations are still wrong, because the demonstration has been promoting by civil society activists. The only thing he added that UNITA have to say is the party are still supporting, as usual, this kind of initiatives, because these initiatives are to, from the demand of local elections against unemployment and to promote human rights.
Mr. Adalberto are saying that his party will continue the trying to have a direct dialogue with the ruling party MPLA.
That was Mario Pavai, a veteran independent Angolan journalist. He was speaking with us from the capital, Luanda. Final voting in this year's U.S. election is next Tuesday, November the 3rd. We have been speaking to people around the world about whether they think the election matters to them and to their countries. Today, we get a view from Liberia.
There's a long, outstanding relationship between Liberia and the U.S. History tells us that the founding fathers of our Republic, Liberia, came from the U.S. The U.S. elections for Liberia in particular and the world in general is very unique because America has a long outstanding relationship democratically across the world. So all over the world, people are poised to watch the debate of the rivals in the American elections, their foreign relations policies, their economic policies, and their domestic policies. We hope and pray that anybody emerges as a winner. We look forward in engaging them and accepting their foreign relations policies that may be to the betterment of the world at large.
That was Alfonso Bella with the view from Liberia on the 2020 U.S. election. We have more comments from around the world about the U.S. election tomorrow. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the surprise announcement by the Confederation of African Football that the CAF Champions League semi-final return match between Zamalek of Egypt and Raja Casablanca of Morocco has been postponed from November 1 to a date to be decided. Many of the Raja squad on Wednesday returned positive tests for the coronavirus, leaving only 10 players fit for the match earlier scheduled. Zamalek lead 1-0 from the first leg in Casablanca, with Moroccan Ashraf Benchaki scoring the only goal midway through the first half. CAF has also announced that the final between Zamalek or Raja and Al Ahly of Egypt, scheduled for an Egyptian venue on November 6th, has also been postponed indefinitely. Now to East Africa, where the draw for the Under-20 African Cup of Nations and Under-17 African Cup of Nations qualifiers of the Central East African Zone has been held. The Under-20 AFCON Regional Qualifiers will be hosted in Tanzania from the 22nd of November to the 6th of December 2020, while the Under-17 Qualifiers will take place in Rwanda from the 13th to the 28th of December 2020, according to the Regional Football Governing Body, SACAFA. The Under-17 Qualifiers will attract 9 countries divided into 3 groups. Host Rwanda, Eritrea, and South Sudan are in Group A, while Group B includes Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya. And Group C composes of Sudan, Djibouti, and Tanzania. Robert Muliendwa is the spokesperson of SACAFA.
And the top two teams after the group stages will straight away go and play the semifinals. And then the two will go into the finals. And we want to make an appeal to the member associations to observe the COVID-19 protocols to the maximum. They must test their players at least 48 hours before they arrive into these respective countries.
And on to athletics, where Ugandan Joshua Cheptegei's 5,000 meters world record has been ratified by the World Athletics Body. The formal consent comes 2 months and 15 days since Cheptegei broke the record in Monaco. Cheptegei, who is also the world 10,000 meters record holder, set a record of 12 hours 35.36 seconds at the Monaco's Wanda Diamond League, beating the long-standing record set by Kenenisa Bekele.
Remain hopeful for the next season, which is Olympic Games, and so many exciting events like you have seen a couple of world records this year. Maybe I can do one more before the Olympic Games, maybe the 5K on the track. Maybe again I can do the 3,000 meters on the track. So it's especially keep your fingers crossed towards next year.
In Kenya, the president of the National Olympic Committee of Kenya, Paul Taggart, wants the Kenyan government to urgently approve for the commencement of team sports and training to resume in order to meet up with their schedule of programs for the 2021 Summer Olympic Games. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, October 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butter in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
VOA.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.